Hi, we're Visible, the wireless company with nothing to hide. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not into you. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business. It's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Recode Radio presents Recode Decode, coming to you from the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Kara Swisher, executive editor of Recode. You may know me as the only person Donald Trump didn't ask to stop the Russia investigations, but in my spare time, I talk tech, and you're listening to Recode Decode, a podcast about tech and media's key players, big ideas, and how they're changing the world we live in. You can find more episodes of Recode Decode anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and more. Or you can just visit recode.net/podcasts for more. Today in the red chair is Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, the little app you might have heard of. He co-founded the company in 2010 with Mike Krieger, and in April 2012, they sold it to Facebook for $1 billion. In April, Instagram announced it had more than 700 million active users. I know Kevin pretty well. I've written profiles of him, and I've known him since the beginning of Instagram. Welcome to Recode Decode.
Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Yeah.
So it's amazing how large Instagram has gotten. So talk a little bit about sort of that journey, because when we met, you had just sold to Facebook, I think, and you had just sort of started off on your journey there.
Right.
Let's review for people that don't know. We have a wider listener base.
Sure.
About what you were thinking when you founded it. It was, as I recall, because when I wrote a profile, it moved from thing to thing to thing before it finally hit on what it became.
Yeah. I started this app called Bourbon. It wasn't even an app, actually. It was a website that worked. It was optimized for the mobile phone. Mm-hmm. So the dirty secret of Instagram is that, like, I didn't know how to make an app. So I just made a website instead. Mm-hmm. And I went around marketing it to VCs as like, hey, HTML5 is the future. forget about apps. This works on Android and iOS. But the dirty secret was, like, I didn't know how to make an app.
Right.
So it turns out that a couple people believed me, Andreessen Horowitz and Baseline Ventures. Mm-hmm. And they were like, this is great, but find a co-founder to go work on this because you got to learn how to make an app. And I ran into Mike Krieger, who is a classmate of mine at Stanford. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the original beta users of this app called Bourbon. And the original idea was that you would check in at a place. This is like the old idea of check-in. So, you know, you're at a bar, you're at a concert.
Right.
You check in and you tell all your friends where you're at. So it was popular with all of 100
people. So Foursquare.
Yeah. It was basically Foursquare, Gowalla. Mm-hmm. But it had a couple really interesting features. So
number one. About Gowalla. Go ahead.
Remember? Yeah, like all the rage around check-ins.
Yeah.
So the first feature was plans. So you could say, hey, I'm planning on being at this place this time. Anyone want to join me? And it was a way of socializing and gathering people together at a location in the future. So that was like a unique angle.
It was. There was one in Japan called Imahima, I think.
Oh, really?
I told you about. Yeah, in 2002, I remember meeting the founder of it. It was that. Yeah, I'm here having a beer.
I'm having a beer, or I'm going to have a beer. And I thought that was pretty innovative, but it wasn't innovative enough to really garner attention, because we would give this app to people and they'd be like, okay, like, first of all, it's not an app. It's a website. Learn how to make an app. And the second thing is, like, this plans thing is cool, but, like, it's not cool enough to use versus Foursquare or Gowalla. But the one feature we had that I think really set it apart was being able to post a photo.
Mm-hmm.
And people would go to a bar, post a photo of the beer they were drinking or whatever they were eating, or they were at a park. And it was a really cool way to see what all your friends were up to.
Sure, because visual. Yeah. You weren't thinking the visual internet, were you?
No. At the time, I mean, I had an iPhone 3G, like the old school one, not even the 3GS. And the camera's pretty crummy, and no offense to the folks that worked on that camera. But listen, it was crummy back in the day. And as we saw people posting photos on this check-in app, we started realizing, hey, there's like a thing there. And Mike and I had this soul-searching moment where we sat down in this room. We had just met with someone from Andreessen Horowitz who looked at us with a blank stare when they heard we were doing a check-in app. And we were like, all right, this isn't going to work. We need to differentiate somehow.
Right.
And we wrote down the things people loved about bourbon. It was plans. It was some of the gamification stuff. And then it was the photos. Mm-hmm. And we crossed the first two off because we were like, I don't know, plan seems niche. The gamification stuff seems, I don't know, it's everywhere. And then the last one was photos. And we're like, you know what? There are some people working on photos on the mobile phone. There was Treehouse at the time. I don't know mm-hmm. if you remember that. There was PicPlease. There were like a bunch apps that were all trying to do photos. And I looked at Mike and I was like, Mike, I think there's something around photos because these cameras are getting better, not worse.
Right.
I think there will be an inflection point where people don't carry around point and shoots anymore. They're just going to carry around these phones. And that inflection point happened literally like 2 months into basically having that discussion.
So thank you,
iPhone
Apple.
4 launched. And that was like the first mobile camera that actually competed with the point and shoot.
Right.
So at that moment, we pivoted and we focused solely on photos. And that was basically the beginning
of
Instagram.
That was the key part. You had been done photography in high school, though. You were a photographer, correct?
And yeah.
I remember talking to your photo teacher from high school.
Yeah, I am. I'm not sure I was a good photographer.
But
I'm not sure I'm a great photographer now either,
right.
By the way. My employees are always like, your photos are okay. but listen, I like running a company and being a good photographer are two different skill sets. I'm not saying I'm good at either, but listen, one of them's working.
Jack Dorsey's really good at it.
I would say that like I was an okay photographer in mm-hmm. high school. I took darkroom classes. I really loved messing around with photos. But the one thing I really loved mm-hmm. was taking a photo and you could actually like add these chemicals
right.
mm-hmm. to the developing bath
right.
or whatever.
So silver.
Yeah. Like I think it was selenium toning that mm-hmm. I used. And my photo teacher at the time.
Olden days.
Well, that was like sepia and then there's selenium and there are all these things. Anyway, you can like mix the chemicals and cross process. And mm-hmm. I was like, these look really cool. And I was using a square format camera and mm-hmm. You know, all of that kind of came back to me as we were working on Instagram. And I think that really resonated with people initially because
sure.
you took a kind of crummy camera and you made it retro on purpose.
Right.
And it took advantage of the crumminess rather than
right.
trying to
exactly.
build around it.
Right, which is what you did with filters, which was the big insight, I think,
yeah.
that you did before other people did.
But I would say on that, I'm not sure many people realize this, but like Instagram wasn't the first company to do filters either. Like there was Hipstamatic, there was Camera Bag. I mean, the Valley is basically built on looking around at all the different ingredients in the world and saying, like, how can I combine this into, like, a new dish?
Right, right.
And, I mean, filters plus social plus basically a Twitter feed of photos, it became, like, a thing overnight.
Sure.
And people actually initially downloaded it thinking it was a filter app.
Ah.
And that's why they downloaded it. They wanted to make their
didn't realize
stuff
it was
look
a social
cool.
media
They had
play.
No idea.
Yeah,
and
interesting.
What happened was they started getting likes.
Right.
And before you knew it, it was like, oh, like there's an actual network here.
Right.
And it started to take off.
Right. So there was a back and forth. And I'm not going to go into detail about you, whether Twitter would buy it. You would talk to the Twitter people rather seriously. Jack Dorsey is one of your first major users that sort of got you kind of hip.
And I worked with him at
Odeo.
You
worked with him at Odeo.
Yeah.
And then you ended up selling to Facebook. I'm going to get into the details of that. But why sell? I mean, why did you think about selling? Because now you sort of could be your own thing. I mean, we talked about this. I always said you sold for cheap. I think I just try to make you feel bad. But
hindsight is 20/20,
yes,
right?
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
Exactly.
But what was the thinking behind it? Because a lot of people feel like Mark got a very valuable company for a relatively small amount of money, considering now.
So let's rewind back to 2012.
Right.
We are not a company of 700 people. We don't have 700 million
right.
people around the world.
And you don't have access to that audience, do you?
No. Let's zoom all the way back to mm-hmm. 2012 in a world where we're sitting around a little table right now.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of our employees would have fit around this table.
Right. It was
we
very
were,
small. It was like
I want to say, we were about 8 or 9 when the deal happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think by the time we actually closed the deal, we were something like 13.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like 8 people right. keeping the service alive that was growing like wildfire.
What was the number? How many people were using it at the time?
I want to say it was something like 20 million.
I remember, yeah.
Which is like a good number.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you can point out a bunch of apps today that have 20 million monthly active users
right.
that are growing and they're fine. But who knows if they'll be the next whatever,
right.
Instagram, Facebook, you name it. So at the time, I mean, we had 8 people. We were struggling to keep the site up. And we were raising money. So every VC looked at us like we were crazy when we asked for a $500 million valuation,
mm-hmm.
which sounds funny now, because like every company goes out, and if you're like doing an Airbnb for right. dogs, you get a $500 million. Yeah, it's like the default term sheet.
Sure.
But at the time, people, I literally got a phone call mm-hmm. back channel from a VC being like, "You're crazy, and it's offensive that you're asking for this yeah. valuation." And I was like, "Oh, like, I mean, I feel like we're actually doing a good hurt? Thing." And no, in retrospect, I realized that phone call was just angling to get a better
yeah.
deal.
Yeah.
But at the time, I mean, listen, I had been running a company for a year. We were struggling to keep the setup, $500 million valuation, and then Mark came along and was like, "Hey, how about I double that? And you get to keep working on what you love, and you get all the expertise of Facebook. And you access. Get to work with me, Cheryl, Schrepp, et cetera." That sounded like a really good deal. And mm-hmm. if you look in retrospect, I think it was a great deal. Mm-hmm. Think about all the things we've accomplished being part of Facebook, mm-hmm. all the things we have plugged into, whether it's hiring, spam fighting, the ad system. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have thousands of salespeople who are basically selling ads for Instagram, mm-hmm. and we snapped our fingers to access them. Right. So a lot of really great stuff.
Did you actually snap your fingers?
Yes, I snapped my fingers. I guess my point is like...
Yeah, no, you had... No, I get it. I get it. It's like which would have happened without the other kind of thing.
I mean, if not I bet for you this, we would have been that. Successful as an independent mm-hmm. company as well, mm-hmm. but I mean, I don't know. Like these things like...
Well, you look at Snapchat. They're struggling because they're smaller.
Well, I don't know if Snapchat's a good example, but like think of all the amazing companies that like got to like 15, 20 million users, and it was mm-hmm. like the hot startup, yeah. all the headlines that
so many.
You know,
so many.
You and others wrote.
We don't write hot headlines.
And then guess what? Yeah. Like they're gone in a year. So it could have gone either way, but in retrospect, what I'm glad is I'm working with my co-founder still mm-hmm. on like the coolest company ever with some of the most amazing coaches in Mark and others.
And what's interesting mm-hmm. is that you're still there. A lot of founders leave. I mean, it's really yeah. kind of, I'm always like, you know, I call you every now and then, I hear you're leaving. And I think sometimes I'm actually, I think you've probably, people have approached you and some things have been interesting for you.
Interesting.
Interesting.
I'd love to hear which ones.
Yeah. I don't know which ones.
Maybe I don't know about the deals.
But I know you've been approached. But what keeps you there? What is the thing? Because a lot of founders leave. They absolutely do when they're a division of a bigger company. And Facebook's only gotten more enormous since you got there.
Yeah. Mike and I often have this conversation, which is like, why do all these entrepreneurs leave on day one? Like Peter Thiel, I think, left PayPal on day one. And yeah. like a, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, it was like a blazing glory of mm-hmm. like whatever, like on the first day. Mm-hmm. Elon, I think, did as well. Right. Yeah. You can name all these entrepreneurs who just left. And I mean, I was talking with an entrepreneur who will not be named, but his point was like, yeah, I just like, I don't know what I would do with you because I've never had a good relationship with my acquirer. It seems like you really do. And I was like, yeah, I mean, Mike and I talk about this all day. It's like Schrepp, who's
this
the CTO.
Mike Schrepp.
And then you have Mark and Cheryl. Like mm-hmm. they have kept to their commitment, not only to keep us independent and allow us to thrive.
Right.
But they've also provided resources for us to do that. Mm-hmm. And why do anything else if you have your baby, which is this company, mm-hmm. is thriving, making a bunch of money, you know, you're launching new products that people really love, that mm-hmm. are successful. Like, to do what? Like, go sit on a beach? Like, right. that sounds...
Well, it's interesting because everybody does do it. You're an outlier in a lot. You're like a unicorn. Yeah. Like, nobody stays in the company. They don't grow with the company. They don't remain.
But usually they're less successful, meaning
yes, later,
the acquired the company one. Kind of floats. It goes sideways.
Yep.
I think
and
Instagram...
Facebook's had a couple of those, too.
Yeah, but I think Instagram has done the opposite.
Right.
I mean, if Instagram, I think, were down, and if we weren't able to control our destiny and, like, a bunch of bad things were happening, I wouldn't mm-hmm. be there. I don't think many people would want to work there.
Right, right.
But, like, I think Mike and I are an example of investing in the company for the long term and waking up every day and being really excited about
growing it. I think a lot of people would want to understand what is the key that they do. Do they pet you? What's the actual – what is the key is that they're that you get to – because you are separate. I know I was there the other day doing a podcast with Cheryl, and I was like, where is Instagram? And you're over somewhere else. Like you have an other building, right? Is that correct?
I mean, we're on a campus. I mean, they mm-hmm. – they.
It's gotten
own
enormous.
Slash lease like a big swath of land. And mm-hmm. We didn't on purpose go far away.
No.
It was just like that was the building that was available.
Mm-hmm. How many people do you have now?
It's like between 600 and 700. It's mm-hmm. hard to nail down an exact number because some people work like half their time on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you have people who contribute and finance and sales
sure.
and a bunch of others. So effectively, if this company were like if we just like took all the resources that we had and spun it out, it would probably be in the thousands.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, like, I think the thing that made it work was actually not what they did. It's what they didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I see Mark practice a tremendous amount of restraint in giving us the freedom to run. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I think he gives us the freedom to run is because when we run, it typically works. Mm-hmm. Now, if we had launched, you know, live stories, you know, video on Instagram, all of those things had cratered, mm-hmm. I don't think we'd have that long of a runway.
Right.
So you earn it. You earn it over time, and it's actually what they don't do what ends up helping. It's like they're not meddling in the product necessarily. And I take that and I think about all the great entrepreneurs we have at Instagram, the people mm-hmm. running the products. And I've learned that lesson as well. If you give people the runway, not to meddle, if things are going really well, like mm-hmm. you leave it alone. And I think that's happened in a bunch of areas at Instagram. So mm-hmm. it recurses down the chain.
So what is your day-to-day? What do you do day-to-day then? What
podcasts.
Peer conferences.
No. So what do I do day-to-day? Yeah. My main job is to make sure that, one, the company's pointed in the right direction. So mm-hmm. strategy. What areas are we focusing on? Okay, we're going to focus on live. We're going to focus on stories. We're going to focus on messaging. We're going to focus on content production, whatever. Like, what are the areas that we focus on? And then making sure that we actually execute against them. Usually that means coaching the team or getting the team in place. So mm-hmm. hiring senior people and working with those senior people to make sure that they have the resources that mm-hmm. they need. I do spend maybe 25% of my time like in the pixels of the product. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of like, I think that's like something as a founder that I hold dear that a lot right. of CEOs I know just abstract themselves. Mm-hmm. I think much to the chagrin sometimes of our designers, I get in the details. But right. listen,
that was always your interest.
But it's like it's my interest, and mm-hmm. I guess when you founded the company, you're allowed to dabble.
Yeah. Ask Steve Jobs.
So I try my best.
Always dabbling in something.
Yeah, but that's what I'd say is my job description: mm-hmm. pointed in the right direction, the right people, and then there's a certain percentage of dabbling.
So let's talk about the growth a little bit. We're in the next section. I want to talk a little bit about other competitors and things like that because people sort of slag you a lot for borrowing some ideas from others. But you mentioned it at the top of this, but we'll get to that later. What do you attribute the growth to? You know, I'm trying to think of my own kid, and I'll give you two observations, another one later. He doesn't use Facebook at all, but he loves Instagram. It's fascinating. Like, and I'm like, why don't you just use Facebook? He's like, no, it's not cool. Hmm. And I was like, is Instagram cool? He's like, yeah, Instagram's cool. Like, it's a really interesting, and he's right in your area. He does use Snapchat heavily also, but he's using Instagram a lot more. And it's a really interesting, you know, that's just an anecdotal thing, but it's I've heard it again and again and again among younger people. Instagram seems to be something they like, and so do old people, so do all kinds of people. So can you talk about the growth? Because I think that's one of the more important things is you've managed to have everybody on it and yet not be like hopelessly uncool for the people that you want to come on.
Thank you. We're not hopelessly uncool.
You
I'm
going to
get that. I'm
going to
get a t-shirt that says that and wear it around
not
the office.
Hopelessly uncool.
Kevin, not hopelessly
not
uncool.
Not that Facebook is, but I cannot get my kid to use Facebook. It's really interesting. I've told this to Mark and Cheryl before.
Well, so there are a couple things going on here. One is a question about like young people in the US. Mm-hmm. When you zoom out and you say how many people are there in the world, billions. Teens or whatever in the U.S., young folks in the U.S. represent a very small fraction of the overall population. So it's possible to be very, very big and have, you know, areas that you want to go work on. Mm-hmm. And I think that teens in the U.S. are particularly interesting to everyone in tech because they tend to adopt products way before everyone else. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen a teen use a phone, their fingers move at a million miles per hour. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, I didn't even know there was that shortcut. They just understand in a way that like you and I don't. I mean, I didn't grow up with a phone in my hand. They are.
Yeah.
And I think that it's interesting to watch what they use because I think it's a signal of where technology is going.
Sure.
It's always been the case. You know, Facebook started with college kids. Mm-hmm. Instagram, interestingly, didn't start with youth. It actually started more with, I'd say, the like, you know, 20, 30 something hipster in San Francisco, self-proclaimed. Mm-hmm. And I think spread out from there. But the growth has really come from that large population overseas. So Instagram, from day one, was a universal network. I mean, images are the one thing that you can look at, not speak the other person's language, and connect with them.
Right.
We had the universal like button, which is just like a universal sign of appreciation. You saw the photo. It doesn't matter what other language that person speaks. So now over 80% of our community is overseas outside the U.S.
Right.
I think
80% now.
Over 80%.
Where particularly?
I mean, you name mm-hmm. it, we're there. I'm mm-hmm. sure we have.
What's your second? I assume U.S. is your biggest market, but maybe.
It probably is, yeah.
Number two or right near there?
We have a bunch of countries right at the top. And the good news is, like, you know, I'll give you some broad categories. Like, Brazil is very, very large for us. India is growing quickly. Europe in general is very strong. We see a lot of strength in developed countries. I'd say it's the less developed countries with less developed mobile networks. More like older phones that don't support higher end media, where I think that's the future of where we need to go and how we need to to sell our product. A lot of our growth in the next year is going to come from that. And that requires a shift, you know, internally, not only for us to appreciate the problems that folks have with lower end phones and lower end networks, connectivity issues. But it also requires us to think hard about, hey, we have to like deliver media over the wire to these phones and display it because that's Instagram. You can't like convert Instagram to text and then it just works. Like a big reason why I think WhatsApp has done so well, especially in overseas markets, is the focus on performance, and it's mostly text. Now, they've optimized the hell out of that app, and I've learned a lot from watching Yann and what they do. Performance is the key for the next chapter of growth. But you asked where growth has
and
come
they've
from.
They've added in photos. They've added in
the stickers.
It's a lot more stickers and text. You're right.
Yeah,
you don't do photos.
I guess what I'm saying is most of our growth is going to come from overseas because there are a lot more people outside the U.S. than there are inside the U.S. That being said, the U.S. continues to be a very interesting market for us where we have to grow. And most of our, you know, ad business is based in the U.S. like most companies.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
We're here with Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, who is still an employee of Facebook. I was with Jeff Weiner on stage, and after LinkedIn got bought by Microsoft, and he refused to say he was a Microsoft employee. It was very funny. And he goes, I'm the CEO of LinkedIn. I go, comma, a division of Microsoft. But you feel good about being part of the bigger picture, about being, but you do have a separate identity. It's an unusual situation where people don't necessarily know that Facebook owns Instagram or WhatsApp or things like that. It's sort of a constellation of products.
As an entrepreneur, if you had to choose to be part of like one tech company, I mean, Facebook's a pretty good one, right? Like it's done very, very well. You know, it's reaching massive heights of users all over the world. It has great technologists who live there. It's working on super cool, you know, bleeding edge technology products. And I'm happy to, you know, proclaim that I'm an employee there. The same time, running the company Instagram is a very different job.
Sure.
And it feels very different. We have a, you know, it's distinct but compatible culture.
What would you say the culture is?
Of Instagram. I'd say it's defined by two very distinct things. Number one is simplicity. So I think if you walk into Instagram, it's a very, very simple aesthetic. Everywhere you walk, we focus on removing complexity at every single step. I think people care deeply about simplicity. The second I'd say is craft. And I'm actually going to name three things. I remembered a third thing. Craft is the second thing. So, you know, we've got a blue bottle coffee in the lobby. It's something Mike and I care really deeply about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have coffee investments, right?
Yeah. And we love coffee.
But you really are the San Francisco dream.
Yeah, but listen, we
have your craft bourbon.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, craft, it's about craft. Like, we care about. You know, there's a...
I can't believe you don't have a handlebar mustache right now, but go ahead.
It's all, well, listen, I didn't have a beard when we first met, so I'm getting there.
That's true.
And I'm kind of wearing...
Yeah,
I'm
you have to get
plaid.
The Lincoln beard if you really want to go the full hog.
But craft is a big part of our culture. The final one that I'd say is we focus on solving problems. Mm-hmm. I have this like problem-centric culture where... You can't come into a product review and just say, hey, here's a cool feature we want to build. Mm-hmm. That doesn't fly at Instagram. Mm-hmm. What does fly is coming in and saying, here's the problem we want to solve for this person. Mm-hmm. Here's how we know it's a problem. Here's the data that backs that up.
Give me
or
an example.
The anecdotes. Sure. So let's talk about stories. Mm-hmm. We looked at sharing on Instagram, and every time we talked to someone, we would say, hey, so why do you share across services? It's like, you know, you share on Snapchat, you share on Facebook, you share on Twitter, you share on Instagram. Like, why do you share across services? And interestingly, what we found was the biggest problem people have with Instagram is feeling the pressure of sharing really amazing photos. Mm-hmm. So you hear anecdotes all the time. You might hear it from your kids. I didn't get enough likes, so I deleted the photo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's good enough to put on Instagram. I can only put one on Instagram per day because, like, I gotta show off this thing, and then it's gonna live on my profile, which is awesome because it represents me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like kind of like hanging a photo in a photo gallery. And it turns out not every photo you want to take, you want to hang in a photo gallery. But it is
definitely
important to communicate.
Instagram's a fancier place.
There you go. So now our values of craft and simplicity reinforce that. But the problem is that people want to actually share a lot more, but they don't want it to hang on the gallery wall. So stories came in as a solution. So the idea was not, hey, there's another company that's doing stories. Let's just do that. It was, okay, we've identified a problem in the community, which is people really want to share more, but the constraints of Instagram are that it has to be really good. You have to be willing to hang it on the gallery wall. And what if we allowed you to also share really informally? Mm-hmm. Things that are throwaway but really valuable for a certain amount of time. Mm-hmm. That flip side of the sharing coin was a problem that we identified along the way seeing consumer trends. Mm-hmm. And when the team walked in, they were like, what problem we're solving is not competition. The problem we're solving is sharing, and here's the data that backs that up. Mm-hmm. And that's why now that we've launched the product, now over 200 million people use stories every day. I mean, it's clearly working and it clearly solves a problem for people. Whereas coming in and just pitching a cool idea, hey, what if we did X, Y, or Z because it's cool and it's a hard technical problem? That doesn't fly at Instagram because you have to be solving
a problem.
Exactly.
Okay. We're going to get to Snapchat in a minute, but you also are competing with Facebook too in terms of people's attention and use because they have photos and videos and live and things like that. What is that? Is there a tension there between that? Because they also are trying to get people to do precisely what you do.
Companies are not single individuals. Mm-hmm. Companies are complex organizations with lots of different people. So I'm sure if you talk to specific people inside of Facebook whose goal is X, Y, or Z, they feel like, oh, I don't know, Instagram or WhatsApp or maybe an Oculus trades off against it. But that's true at any company, right? Mm-hmm. If you have, you know, a couple of reporters who are both covering similar things, they're competing, right? Like whose story goes out first? Mm-hmm. But that's okay. And I think that's relatively healthy. I think the interesting thing is, you know, sharing photos is not sharing photos across every service. People do it for different reasons. On Facebook, you find a lot of, hey, I want to memorialize this vacation or this wedding or this amazing thing that happened, and I want to share it with my friends and family, coworkers, et cetera. And it's an album, it's rich, et cetera. I think that's great. And Instagram tends to be more about, hey, is this photo crafted, composed correctly? Mm-hmm. Is the light right? Am I using the right filter? And so that just scratches a different itch. But they're both photos and
that's
videos.
A Facebook thing. Yeah,
and I think that's totally fine. And, you know, I talk a lot about this, like, jobs hypothesis. Have you ever heard about, like, what job did you hire this thing for? Mm-hmm. The Clay Christensen thing?
No.
It's amazing. And I use it all the time in the company, which is, you know, what job are you hiring this product for? And they asked people when they walked in, I think it was like a McDonald's or something. Mm-hmm. What job are you hiring that milkshake for? And people like looked at them crazy, like you're looking at me crazy right now. But he would explain, like what problem does it solve in your life? And they figured out there were two distinct consumer groups. One was it solves a breakfast problem. So when I'm on the way to work, I order this milkshake because it's easy. It's like a protein shake in the morning. And then there's another segment of customers in the afternoon who basically buy it to keep their kids happy before they actually make dinner. And now whenever company or whenever people come into the room to talk about products, we talk about what job are you hiring that product for? So you know, talk about photo sharing, you can hire different products for different jobs, and it happens to be that they're all photo sharing products.
They're similar, right?
Similar. Different audiences, different creative tools, different jobs. And as soon as you look at the world through that lens, you realize why it makes sense that all these products exist. They might compete with each other on the margin, but in general, they have very distinct jobs.
So I'm going to talk about some of your competitors, Twitter. One of my greatest angers, I cannot share my Instagram. I have to double post them. Now, if you want the best quality, you have to double post them. When is that ever going to get fixed, or never? Is that just never happening?
I haven't thought about that subject in a really long time.
It bothers a lot of people who use both.
That being said, I think there are ways of doing it. I mean, you can use like there are reposting apps like If This
They Never
Then
Look
That,
Right.
And,
yeah,
oh, well.
They never look right. It used to be great. You could just post one on Instagram, would go on Twitter looking beautiful. And...
Yeah, there was like basically a time where we had integrated with a bunch of their stuff and then they cut off
access. They cut it off. They were mad at you.
And it was just like, you know, companies are companies and they have deals and that deal fell through. But, it's, you know, I'm not against
it. So how do you look at what the things they're doing? Because a lot of, you know, they were doing Vine and other things that are similar to Facebook and you. I mean, do you consider them a competitor or not? They're
Which
more
one? Twitter?
Twitter.
Or Vine?
They're in the moment. I think they're more in the moment news kind of thing.
You know,
thing.
Once you get to a certain size. Okay. So actually, I want to answer this a different way, which is. The thing that I think I learned at Facebook, being at Facebook, that I would not have considered otherwise is the focus on time. So time is this indivisible unit. It's very hard.
That
at least
you only have a certain amount.
You only have a certain amount of time. It is the indivisible, mutually exclusive unit of your life.
That you
you're
must
either
choose.
Watching TV, you're either reading the newspaper or using a social network, right? And sure, you can shift around time on a given day, but time is the thing you're competing for. So by that measure, yeah, like, you know, Reed Hastings at Netflix, you know what he calls his biggest competitor?
What?
Sleep.
Sleep.
It's like super interesting, right?
He would say that.
Yeah, right? But I took that from him and I was like, you know what? Like sleep's a competitor, maybe reading's a competitor. So yes, once you get to a certain size, like I guess you're competing for time and attention. And the question is your use case looking at photos the most compelling one? But I don't know. I mean, I don't wake up every day thinking about competition and like, you know, hey, what features are they working on and what features should we be working on? I think the question is, do we have like a singular mission for the company? Are we going after it? And are we solving the real problems that our community has on every given day?
So talk about your focus on video, because that's really been in stories and the idea of what you're doing. And then I do want to get into talking about Snapchat for you to talk about that, how you feel about what people say about borrowing their things. Talk about why video. What's the shift? Because Instagram has been a photo service. It still is largely a photo service, or is it not? Is it not?
Depends how you define it. So
Video or photos.
Okay, so put it differently. Every passing day, video becomes more and more of a percentage of what gets shared, but definitely more and more of a percentage of how much time people spend on Instagram. So if you just look at like, okay, the 20-something minutes per day that people spend on Instagram, what percentage of that is watching video? It goes up over time. Today is probably the highest day of history, and it's probably the lowest day of the future. And that's because I think video has become more... it wouldn't be accepted. It's more possible because you have higher data speeds. You have more unlimited plans, or I guess in certain countries you have more limited plans. But people are consuming more and more video because I think the devices are getting better. People are learning to produce video better. Stories is actually largely video. So if you actually watch your stories at the top of Instagram, you're going to see a lot of video. So it's not necessarily the 16:9 beautifully produced trailer that people are watching. It's actually, you know, video, full screen 9x16 vertical video on both stories and live. Mm-hmm. People are spending a lot of time on those and watching those. It's just a shift in behavior. I think people are getting past the fact that a single frame represents a moment, and they're realizing that you can actually consume life through video, and that's going to continue to happen.
Is that a good thing? Because it's not really craft, is it? It's really not. You can't, they get messier and they get less.
I think you
curated.
Can have craft and messiness. I mean, look at a Jackson Pollock. Like, you both describe that as messy.
A lot of
and
Jackson Pollock's videos on your service.
Yeah, but you know, I'm just saying there are precedents for messy, beautiful.
Right.
So I don't think craft is necessarily.
But does it change this idea around simplicity around your service? Because it does, and it's noisier. It's much noisier. It's more, it's a different product, really. Or not. I don't know.
So, okay. We, you know, initially, I think our mission, like when we first started, was something like, you know, capture and share the world's photos or something, right? And I think we changed it to moments when video came along. But now we talk about strengthening relationships. And if you think about strengthening relationships, you can do that through different types of media. It can be a photo. It can be a boomerang. It can be a time lapse. It can be like you can capture a moment all sorts of different ways. It can be a live video. And we're going to adopt any format that allows you to strengthen your relationship with other people through that shared experience. So if I can see what you're doing on the weekend, you can see my bike ride. You know, I can see my friend, the book they're reading. I feel like I'm getting closer to them through that shared experience. We're going to have all that. So like, it's not about photos.
It's not about the what it is, what meaning the format.
Yeah.
The
I mean, a baby's first steps, like, you want to see a photo of that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, no. Right. Now, does boomerang work? Sure. You know, do I want a video? Probably.
Right.
But, you know, if you're watching a live concert, you probably want live video. There's just like all sorts of use cases to grow closer with others through different formats. So I hate it when I read articles that, you know, name Instagram the photo sharing app.
Right.
It's like the first thing I said when I got to Facebook, actually, I did an all hands in front of the entire company. And I said, just so you know, we are not a photo sharing app.
Even though you just paid $1 billion for a photo.
We are not a photo sharing app. And everyone looked at me like I was crazy. I remember Mark came after. He was like, why did you say that? Like, I don't get it. And I explained, like, I think we're much more than that. We're about people knowing each other, sharing their moments in their lives. It's going to be more than just photos in the future. Of course, video, but like other formats too. And that tends to resonate with people once they understand it. And I think our history shows that we've gone after that.
So video is now increasingly, do you ever imagine a time when photos is a very tiny part of your business?
I can't. Well, part of our, so I'm going to get like specific here. So video, I think, will be a large part of what's consumed. I think photos will be a large part of what people take. I don't imagine a world where, I mean, I could, you know, foot in my mouth about this, but like, I don't imagine a world where videos are just the primary way people share because photos are so easy. But I mean, you can define it in different ways. And when you say part of your business, it's like, which one monetizes better? I mean,
which one doesn't monetize better?
That's a good question. I think it depends on the surface.
Video's and difficult on your service.
No, videos actually, you know, videos are pretty good. And, I don't know. Advertisers see them as premium. Depends on the producer.
Right. Not inserting them in other people's feeds, but in terms of doing their own thing.
Yeah. But I mean, you look at stories. Is stories video the same as feed video? So it gets complex. Is live video the same as feed video? That's why I think we can't call these things just photos or videos. It's like it totally depends on the exact format.
How do you differentiate between the live and the story? What do you, how do you look at it?
Well, right now, live is ephemeral. So you and I can go live right now. We'll have a bunch of viewers. And then the second we click done, it's gone. And that actually unlocks a bunch of sharing because I feel more comfortable sharing. And I'm not worried it's going to get discovered later and I'm going to look silly, whatever. Turns out teens really love it for that use case as well. They hang out after school with their friends on live. And that's very different than, say, editing a beautiful trailer in 16 by 9 to show off a new movie. So while it's it's definitely a video, they're two very different experiences. And I think it just shows the depth of one format that it can be many things.
Right. So let's get to Snapchat. My son also is an avid user of both things. He was like, you met him, you remember?
Yeah.
He says, tell that tall guy I'm really pissed at him because he stole Snapchat. He stole what they're doing. And I'm mad because I don't want to do that on Instagram and that's what I do on Snapchat. Fast forward recently, he does it on Instagram. He shifted over, and he still uses Snapchat quite heavily. And he talks, the language he speaks is, "I'm doing snaps. I'm doing." He doesn't say, "I'm doing Instagrams." But he definitely was annoyed that he goes, "That's not what I use Instagram for." And he was sort of mad as a brand, like, you know, when something becomes something else. I think someone who's an avid user gets annoyed by the shift. Talk a bit about the criticism of you essentially Snapchat coming up with something and you all copying it.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's take Instagram day one. Mm-hmm. Instagram was a combination of basically Hipstamatic, Twitter, mm-hmm. some stuff from Facebook, like the like button. In fact, mm-hmm. the like button came from Friend Feed. Mm-hmm. Like, you can trace the roots of every feature
sure.
anyone has in their app
right.
somewhere in the history of technology. Mm-hmm. Apple designed a cell phone. Sure, it looked different. It was like full screen glass screen. First one without a keyboard, but it wasn't the first cell phone, right? Mm-hmm. Tesla, mm-hmm. super innovative, definitely not the first car. It's got wheels, it's got mm-hmm. air conditioning, right? But, you know, it's powered differently, so that's okay. unique. I don't think you can find a single thing in Silicon Valley that hasn't been built on the amazing work mm-hmm. that technologists throughout history have done. Mm-hmm. We decided we wanted to have this slideshow format, mm-hmm. which we also called stories, and that probably makes the copying narrative a little easier, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a slideshow. And, you know, it turns out people really like it. And if we just copied, I don't think people would just use it, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, they're going back to the jobs being hired for. That job is being fulfilled by someone else really well. Mm-hmm. So what we had to do is say, are we fulfilling an actual need that people have? And are we going to do it in a unique and useful way? I think the answer is yes, because now over 200 million people use it every single day. I think that's an awesome testament to doing it well. Mm-hmm. But originality is an interesting concept in Silicon Valley, because I think we look around and I think we focus so much on who had what idea first, but mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
it's
Twitter,
totally natural.
Facebook, I mean, Facebook. Yeah. But I mean, you look the first time anyone adopts something that someone else did, I think there can be this criticism. Mm-hmm. But I mean, can you imagine LinkedIn without a newsfeed? Can mm-hmm. you imagine Twitter without effectively a newsfeed? Mm-hmm. Like ranked feed now Twitter's doing it. LinkedIn does it. We all do it. I think there are these innovations that happen. And then they spread throughout technology. And I mean, I know we live in a society based on capitalism, but mm-hmm. competition is good for consumers. Mm-hmm. And it would be crazy if we saw something that worked with consumers that was in our domain and we didn't decide to compete on it. So I understand.
So filters, same thing.
Filters, same thing.
What have they borrowed from you? I think that's an interesting question.
Yeah, so I mean, I think Snapchat's a great company. I think they're going to continue to do well. But like, you know, when you look back, I mean, they didn't have filters initially. They adopted filters because I think Instagram had filters and a mm-hmm. lot of others were trying to adopt filters as well. Facebook adopted filters. Mm-hmm. And you could have said the same thing at the time. Oh, we're copying each other. But I don't know. That's just the way Silicon Valley works. Mm-hmm. The question is, who executes the best? Mm-hmm. And execution is everything. We are doing our best to provide a service to users that people clearly want that scratches an itch, which is, I don't want to just share the highlights of my day. I also want to be able to share the ongoing moments throughout the day. And it just solves it really well. So then the question is, on a level playing field between companies, mm-hmm. now you have stories in Facebook, you have it in My Day on Messenger, and you've got it on WhatsApp, and you're going to see it other places too. Who does it the best and who executes on creative tools, on the next generation features? Like, who does it the best? And that is going to be, I think, the determination of, like, who wins in the long run.
Right.
But honestly, it's not going to be one winner. You're going to have many winners, and you're going to have people competing, and you're going to have different subsegments of users who are adopting a certain thing because they love it. I mean, Facebook's not the only social network in the world. It may be the largest. But I think that's okay. And that's, like, what makes Silicon Valley work is that mm-hmm. competition and looking around and adopting like the best of breed things to make your service better.
So do you, when people use those criticisms, what do you feel like?
I mean, I think it's fair for people to criticize, but I just like, I don't know, like imagine like the only car in the world was the Model T right now. Mm-hmm. Like someone invents the car. It's really cool. Horseless mm-hmm. carriage, they called it, right? Mm-hmm. But do you blame like other companies for also building cars that have wheels and a steering wheel and AC and windows?
It's a little closer. Some of the stuff feels a little closer to what they're doing. I know it feels like it to them. It feels like, you know, they feels.
I mean, it's always going to feel that way to the first car producer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you have windows too. Oh, you have a steering wheel. Oh, you have AC. You have radio, right? Like, the question is, what unique stuff do you build on top of it? So, you know, when we adopted it, we decided that one of the really annoying things about the format was that it just kept going and you couldn't pause it to look at something. You couldn't rewind. And we did all that. Like, we actually, we implemented that.
You're a much easier version. No question.
My point is, like, think about the car analogy. I mean, different cars have different functionality and different utility values depending on the features. And that's our job, is not just to look at another car company and copy the shape of their car and all the, you know, unique characteristics, but instead make it our own. Same with newsfeed between Facebook and all these others. It's like, it's one thing to have a newsfeed, but you got to make it your own over time. And I think that that is our job. And I think we're doing pretty well at it.
This week on The Pitch, it's tween time.
We're redefining feminine hygiene for tweens.
You've done 5 million in sales. You did 3 million last year. Very impressive.
Thank you.
I really believe in this category. I'm an investor in a company called AmpFloat.
And similarly, I'm a personal investor in Ruby Love.
Like Elizabeth and Charles, I have seen a lot of these companies. Mm-hmm. I've never made an investment in the space. You should be raising more than $500,000.
As a Black woman, for me to come on here and say, I'm going to become the new Always, that's super audacious. And I could we for sure.
What makes it audacious?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
You told us what you wanted. That's what I wanted to hear.
I get the sense back her experience might have been a little different.
Save the mic.
That looked really expensive.
This week on The Pitch, Monica Williams drops the mic. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're here with Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram. We've been talking about a lot of things, about Snapchat, about Twitter, about stories, innovation, how to do things. I want to talk about innovation and where it's going, because one of the things, you know, I do understand the iteration of companies upon companies upon companies, but some people feel that maybe true innovation is harder to be the original of an idea. Instagram, you're right, there were lots of photo sharing services, but you were unique in terms of what you offered. Do you feel that you've lost innovation, or how do you keep innovation at a company? And things that you truly introduce that are a wow, that just come from you.
Yeah. I don't think that we've lost that spirit internally. I think, like, again, true innovation is like looking around at the world and putting the ingredients together and figuring out how to execute on it, market it, scale it. I mean, the amount of work that goes into making these things work at scale at 700 million users around the world, that's like where the magic is every single day, making it work in different countries, on different networks. I mean, the reason why we're seeing the growth we have,
because you do it well in lots of places.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say, you know, 90% of our effort on a given day is figuring out how to scale the service, not just like technically, but like all the like nooks and crannies of the product that need to work for people. I think one of the areas that I'm most proud about our innovation is actually around this area called well-being. About 6 months ago, I decided that we were in a particular position with our scale and the people that worked at our company and the characteristics of them, that we could actually be one of the first companies, if not the first company online, to really set a precedent about caring about our users and our community. We've always been really community focused. But you might ask, okay, Kevin, what does that mean? You talk to teenagers today about their experience online, and bullying is a thing. You talk to any parent, I'm sure you feel this way. Bullying is one of maybe the biggest problems that teenagers have online.
Yeah. Twitter's a hellscape.
Well, you can talk about anyone at any age. I totally agree. I'm picking teenagers as a specific example of a population that is most vulnerable. And what I decided 6 months ago or so was that we were going to have an entire group of people that literally work on making the internet a safer place. Not just Instagram, but other services as well. We're going to build technology, processes, et cetera, to basically make the experience on Instagram a safer place. So comment moderation. We have machine learning teams that basically try to figure out when someone's getting bullied to help them. You know, suicides are a topic that are like very, you know, current right now online, especially with live. How do we get in front of people so that we can save those people before they harm themselves? That takes a lot of hard work. And that is not, you know, what stickers or face masks are we launching? It's actually real technology that keeps people safe.
Imagine Facebook's been drawn into that. And interestingly, before it was launched, I did say to some of your executives, like, someone's going to kill themselves. And they said I was negative. You know what I mean? Like, it was an interesting thing. What I want to get to is, why don't these technologists think of this before they're starting to create their... And then they're like, oh, we made it. We didn't know. And I'm like, you kind of could have anticipated some of these behaviors. And it's interesting that it doesn't happen on Instagram. You know what I mean? It doesn't. Maybe it's just not the platform of choice for murdering. But you know what I mean? But why is that? What do you think? Is it because people don't think of it that way?
Well, I mean, a couple of characteristics. One, the internet's a really big place.
Sure.
No one person can control what happens on the internet or what people choose to do or broadcast. Right. That can mean really good things, which is, you know, social media allows for democratic voice.
There's things they can control on Facebook.
Well, you can be an unheard person with an issue and then be heard because it gives you a platform.
Sure.
People with eating disorders, people with psychological issues, mental health issues. It can be a really healing place for a lot of people to connect.
Absolutely.
So that's the pro side. The con side is there are a lot of people in the world and some people choose to do very bad things.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
That happens in the world.
Of course not.
All right, it's always happened. The question is, now that people have a platform to broadcast
well,
that,
now
what do
you're
do?
Running the platform, so it's your job. That's my feeling is that a lot of these platforms will act like they're agnostic, like, oh, we don't, it's just a platform, it's just benign. I'm like, it's not benign, and you have responsive, you know, like, same thing.
I would never claim that.
Same thing around fake news, for example.
No, my what I was just saying to you about well-being is that I actually think Instagram has signed up to be a leader in this space and say, no, this is our responsibility as a large platform. We're never going to get it perfect. It's a really big place. We're never going to get perfect, but we are going to try.
But I want to get to why technologists don't think like what is it a chip missing that it's like not, they don't understand. There is a real feeling that I feel that they abrogate their responsibilities that they are clearly have at this point. That, you know, I was having an argument with someone at Facebook, you know, about, you know, I was like, the New York Times has to get it right. And they do. They take it as a solemn responsibility. Why don't you have to get it right? You know what I mean? Like, why are you suddenly become a platform of no ability to control it when you have every means of control, or you have a lot of means? Not perfect. Nobody was expecting perfection from the New York Times or anybody else. But not thinking about it was really, like, what happens in technology where you just make something and don't think about the consequences? And I guess that's what I want to talk about, consequences.
Well, I can't diagnose the specific individuals you're talking about because I don't know the specific cases. What I can tell you is that I feel differently.
Mm-hmm.
And now, do I feel personally responsible for making the world a safer place online? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to get perfect? No.
Mm-hmm.
But the intention's there. And I realize that the products we build have real impact on people. They have impact on their mental health. They have their impact on their social networks in the real world, their relationships with their friends. And at its best, that can be such an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
At its worst, it's really scary. And no one has the answers day one. Why? Because it is absolutely unprecedented that you have companies that are operating at the scale that we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't name another company that operates in the billions of people on a given day.
I get that.
But that's not a defense. That's just simply, it's unprecedented. So I think what you're seeing is we're all learning along the way.
I know, but to me, the like, an adult knows consequences. You know what I mean? That's the difference between a teenager and an adult kind of thing. Like, that they do understand the impact of what they're doing. And it was an interesting journey for Mark to come from fake news. We had nothing to do with it to, oh, okay, maybe we should work on community. Maybe we should police this stuff. Maybe we should. But it was a fast journey because he got so much pressure. When you're running, you have an equally large platform. What do you think your responsibilities are in doing that? Now, Instagram, to be fair, is one of the nicer places on the internet. You don't see a lot of ugly comments. They're shut down really quickly. It's astonishing, actually. I never have a repulsive experience on Instagram, and I have it every day on every other service, and increasingly on Facebook, all the time on Twitter. And at some point, it's the responsibility of the platform owners. What do you do? Like, I'm paying you a compliment. It's not a repulsive. It's not a repulsive place to be.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't be on a T-shirt either. Why do you think that is? Is it because of the tools you use or the people that use it? Because it seems like 700 million people, you're going to get some bad apples all over the place.
Yeah. our rule day one of Instagram, it actually came from, you're going to laugh. There was this video, and I could find it somewhere. The founder of Lolcats,
Ben
Hall,
that guy.
Right?
Yeah.
Did this whole speech about community building. And he said, you have to prune the trolls. And my wife, you know, I was like watching this video to like learn about community building. And she likes to poke fun at me. And she says, are you pruning the trolls? And it became like a thing in the household. But now, actually, day one of Instagram, we had this like mantra, which was prune the trolls. And me, Mike, our first hire was a community manager, not an engineer, not a designer. And listen, in retrospect, do I wish we had more, you know, engineers to scale a service? Sure. But the first thing we did was we made sure to prune the trolls. So I was deactivating accounts. Mike was deactivating accounts. We didn't really have like clear policies at the the outset, but it set a tone that like, if you're not going to be a good player, if you're not going to play by the rules, you're out of here. And it wasn't about like, oh, they copied my photo. Like there was some of that. It was like, if you're here to cause trouble, you don't belong. And I think that set a tone in the community. Now, I think that's scaled, but listen, at 700 million people, it's not perfect. And as much as you have a great experience on Instagram, there are a lot of people that don't. But it is our job to make sure that we do everything possible to staff against great projects that innovate on keeping people safe. So whether that's machine learning and using artificial intelligence to identify comments that are bullying and get rid of them immediately, identifying accounts that are bad actors before they act, figuring out how to keep people safe online is, I mean, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years down the road, I'm not going to remember the funny stickers that we built or the face masks. I mean, the bunny's cute, but like, put that aside. That's not our legacy. Our legacy is like, are we keeping people safe online? And well after all of us are gone, did Instagram leave its mark on the world by developing technologies and tools that other social networks can adopt? And I mean, you know, you asked about copying. The one thing I hope every single company copies from Instagram, I hope, is our effort on keeping people safe.
One of the things that people worry about is, though, is it's not going that way, that social media has become weaponized. Look, we have a president who uses Twitter as a cudgel. That troll has not been pruned, and they can't prune him because he doesn't cross the line. How do you change that shift? Because it looks a little bit like it's going in a very bad direction, no matter how many people try to pull it back.
It is hard.
Or do you
right?
not think at that?
No. I'm acknowledging the problem, and I don't have perfect answers. But I think, number one, you model the behavior you want to see. So I think our company spends an inordinate amount of time on modeling great behavior. So whether it is, you know, the programs we do with academics to understand the impact on mental health.
You have anthropologists, I know.
Yeah, like, I mean, we spend a ton of time on modeling great behavior that I think we want other social networks to model as well. And again, if, you know, like when Elon, you know, gave up the patents to Tesla, he's like, please copy this because the world gets better if people do this. I feel the same way about the technology we're building around people, keeping people safe. The way I look at it, though, is like it's our responsibility to innovate and we're not going to always get it right. And I think it's really hard. I don't have the answers. I wish I was smarter to figure this out. But we have a lot of smart people at Instagram who are working actively on it. I don't have a clear answer for you because there is no clear answer.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to talk about two more things, the business model and then what are you worried about? Let's start with the first. Right now, you're advertising the number. Do you have a number that you've released?
Which one?
Advertising sales.
No, we don't release advertising sales. I think we released active advertisers recently. 1 million active advertisers, I think, was the number. And I mean, it's grown a lot because how long is
that? And
that's
mostly putting up pictures or videos or whatever.
It's all putting up photos and videos.
Right.
And in fact,
but not inserting into other people's feeds or things like that.
Sorry. I guess the way to think about it is that
I mean,
we
they're
have
in
ads,
the feeds, but yeah, they're doing their own creatives.
Yes, yeah, exactly. They're doing their own creatives. And we're seeing a bunch of, you know, great anecdotes from advertisers about how they love the performance on the platform. They reach, you know, unique audiences. But at the scale of 700 million, if you're an advertiser and you want to reach, you know, a 32-year-old female in Alaska who really loves, I don't know, salmon fishing, you can find that person.
You can find that easily.
And that's what's unprecedented. I was just at a conference with a bunch of CEOs and from more traditional companies. And, you know, I looked around and I said, how many of you guys and gals feel like you're being told to do social media and you don't know what to do? And all of them raised their hands. And then I said, the one thing you can get from social media, and I raised my hand and I said, you know, disclaimer, I work for this company and I benefit from you buying ads. Mm-hmm. But like, you can reach the consumers you want to reach. And that's unprecedented because you buy TV, you buy print, you buy all these things and you spend a bunch of money and you're never going to fire anyone for buying TV. But like, when you start to realize you can reach the exact consumers you want to reach and know if they convert, like that's unprecedented in the history of advertising. That's why I think all these companies are doing
well. What do you see happening on Instagram so people will convert? What is the, I mean, people looking at, say, a Burberry in the feed, which they could do on their own and not work with you necessarily. Is there a, I just haven't seen anything that innovative in the advertising space to that's not just like banner ads.
You know the strangest thing about advertising is the one part of technology where your goal is not actually to innovate day one. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to sell advertising at scale, if you go to advertisers and you say, we have this crazy new format, you got to produce this crazy new thing and like think about it completely different than how you think about TV and print and all that stuff, it falls flat.
Right.
So actually what you want to do is figure out how do you have a very basic format that works really well and performs well on the metrics that advertisers care about. And they use a shared language between things like TV, print, radio, and online media. And when you do that, it actually starts working really well. So, I mean, look at what Facebook's business model was many years ago with social ads, et cetera. It was hard to sell that. But now that you have something really simple that you basically measure against other comps like Google and TV, et cetera, you can actually buy it really easily. And it makes sense inside of a buying program. So I don't think our goal is to be innovative necessarily in the product offering. I think our goal is to be innovative in the value we deliver. Mm-hmm. The fact that you know that that customer then converts. And then you can say to your boss, I know I just spent, I don't know, 10 grand on this ad campaign. Mm-hmm. We got 30 grand back. It was worth it. Let's do more.
Right.
And that's the thing that I think...
But do you see innovation in that?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we launched... We launched advertising on Stories recently, which is a different format. We do multi-product ads, so you can swipe between different types of products. We just launched the save feature, which is like super popular on Instagram right now. And a lot of the things people are saving are commercial posts. So you see a cool sweater from this brand, you save it. I mean, the secret of commerce online is like no one wants to convert in the moment on like a $200 item. So if I see something really cool, like a bike helmet I really want because I'm big into cycling. I'm not going to like convert on the spot, but maybe I'll save it. Maybe I'll come back to it. Maybe I'm choosing between three different models. That's the type of experience I think we can innovate on Instagram. And I think we're doing pretty well at that. I mean, it's the early innings, so game is yet to finish. So we'll see.
All right.
But it's really
couldn't
cool.
escape without a sports metaphor. Last question. What do you worry about? I mean, I ask a lot of people I interview here, a mistake they made. I don't want sort of the learning.
Personally or for the company?
No, personally. What do you worry about personally?
Personally, I'm really new at my job in the grand scheme of things. Like I told you, I was at the CEO conference and I meet these amazing seasoned managers, the Jack Welches of the world. And I've been managing people, like 4 or 5 years now? I'm not bad at it, I don't think. I mean, we should ask the people in the room. But learning to scale as an individual in a hyper-growth mode is something that I don't think many people have to deal with.
Right.
Because usually, you know, you take your job, you get promoted, you like, you know, learn skills, you go to seminars.
And the bar is low in Silicon Valley, let's be honest. No one
ever really like drops you in the deep end, like managing a company that now touches twice as many people than live in the United States on a monthly basis. And that's a lot of, I mean, it's pressure, but in a good way. Like, I love competition. I'm one of the more competitive people you'll meet. I love waking up every morning and feeling like I don't have it perfected. So running the company, I think, is something that I've grown a tremendous amount in the last few years and something that I look at and I know I'm not perfect at. And I have a ton of growth
ahead
of me.
What do you think you do wrong? Or a mistake you've made?
Which one? At this
conference.
Someone
just told me 40% of decisions are wrong, so you have to accept that.
Warren Buffett was on stage, and people were like, what are the big ones you miss? And he's like, where do I start?
Yeah, well, the internet.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Bezos has this line that people shouldn't be judged based on their batting average, but rather their slugging percentage. That's effectively what he talks about. So, again, getting back into sports. It's not about, like, on average. It's the question is, when you hit, are you hitting grand slams? And that's something that I think we've transitioned to at Instagram, which is like, okay, we can take a lot of risks and fail. Does that matter if that product fails? No, not really. Mm-hmm. What matters is we have one every couple of years that's a grand slam.
Yeah.
And I think Stories falls into that bucket. Mm-hmm. I think we've had other ones, like the adoption of video falls into that bucket. And the question is, what's the next? Well, I mean, the initial version of Direct was terrible, mm-hmm. right? Like, didn't really take off. Mm-hmm. We had this weird thing where, like, it put you and a bunch of friends into a thread. Mm-hmm. It was just silly and weird. We pivoted it to be a messaging service. That started working. And that grew to be a sizable portion of the community using it on a monthly basis. And then now adding ephemeral photos into that, I think, has accelerated that growth. Mm-hmm. But I have plenty of failures along the way. I mean, we did, there was a ephemeral photo sharing thing we did called Bolt that just fell flat, miserable. Oh, okay. It was awful. Mm-hmm. Good news is not many people remember it. But, we worked on advertising for a long time that was very curated. I approved every ad.
Remember.
That was totally unscalable. There were a lot of reasons to doing it that probably don't make sense to go into right now. But
I think you can probably be a little fussy. That's my impression.
Fussy is
a
good thing.
I've seen you with your liquor, with your bourbon and stuff like
that. I don't drink that much anymore.
No,
so,
I know, but you had that cart. Yeah.
Yeah, we did have a bourbon.
But you
cart.
Like it. It's
but
just
fussy
a,
is like, I mean,
I don't mind
could
fussy.
I be good at my job if I wasn't fussy?
Right, that's true.
Now,
that's true.
I honestly think about this and I'm like, okay, so you can be fussy, mm-hmm. but you better be right because
that's
otherwise
right.
you're fussy and wrong all the time.
Yeah,
and those people get kicked out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So hopefully my slugging percentage is on the up and up. But maybe that's the thing I worry about most. Like, are we keeping our slugging percentage up and taking enough big bets?
All right. I can't believe I'm asking this such a cliched question, but if you weren't doing this, what would you do? Run
probably.
For office? Has anyone asked you to do that yet? Everyone's being asked.
It's
to
so
do that.
Funny. I actually, like, before the
whole...
Because
if Mark's running and petting cows and Cheryl's running and...
Listen, I would not want to compete with Mark. He's great. And also, he stated that he's not doing it. So,
yes, I know. I think people are dead wrong about that. But
I would not run. I once brought up the idea because our COO, Marnie, worked in...
Right.
She worked in D.C. for a long time. And I was like, well, maybe someday, like, I'll run for office. And she looks at me and she's like... I don't think you'd last a moment. I like my solitary time. I like thinking and reading and like,
people grabbing you. No, I don't see
shaking a lot of hands.
Yeah,
right.
No.
But listen, I don't know. That's not something that's on my list. Yeah. What would I be doing otherwise? I would definitely just go back to starting another company. Like if you told me I can do Instagram tomorrow, I'd go back to starting another company. Honestly, I'm a pretty mission-driven person myself. I'd probably figure out the best way to bring people together and strengthen relationships that wasn't Instagram. Mm-hmm. What that is probably involves media. It probably involves things like virtual reality. There are a bunch of really exciting new chapters in technology coming ahead. I'd love to work on that stuff. But the good news is I have this platform. It's called Instagram, and mm-hmm. I get to do all of that there.
Virtual reality
so
Instagram.
As long
is
as
that
I,
coming?
As long, that's a good question. We'll time it. I'd probably be doing that. But I'm an active person. I want to stay active. And building a company is one of the most thrilling experiences of my life. And I'm going to keep doing it.
Oh, that's good. I thought you'd just say, I want to be an astronaut or something.
No, I don't think so.
I'd be a spy.
Listen, I'd probably bike a little bit more. But listen, it's a fine balance.
Absolutely. Anyway, thank you so much. We've been talking with a very thoughtful executive who he always has been and I think he always will be. Kevin Systrom from Instagram. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed the interview as much as I did, be sure to subscribe to the show. Be the first to listen to future episodes or catch up on previous episodes, including some really fantastic interviews I've done with Internet Archive Chairman Brewster Kahle, technology journalist John Markoff, and Mr. Robot creator Sam Esmail, just to name a few. All those interviews and more are at recode.net/decode. Now that you're done with this, why not try one of our other podcasts? Recode Media with Peter Kafka comes out every Thursday. On Fridays, I host Too Embarrassed to Ask along with Lauren Good of The Verge. And on Recode Replay, you can find audio from our events like the Code Conference, Peter Kafka's Code Media, and Jason Del Rey's Code Commerce. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to Digital Media, the company that distributes our show, including Beth O'Connell and our editor, Chris Basil. And thank you to our producer, Eric Johnson. This has been another episode of Recode Decode. Remember to subscribe to the show and leave us a review at itunes.com/recodedecode. I'll be back here on Monday with another great guest. Tune in then.